On this 13th day of June 2011 in San Diego, we're reading from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, Contents of the Gita Summarized. Text number 44. 244. Bhogaishraya pasaktanam taya padita chetasam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samadhau navadhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Purport. Samadhi means fixed mind. The Vedic dictionary, the Nirukti, says, Samyag adhiyate smin atma tattva yatatmyam. When the mind is fixed for understanding the self, it is said to be in samadhi. Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyments, and who are bewildered by such temporary things. They are more or less condemned by the process of material energy. Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmidatam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, when we go back to text 41, we'll see that these verses all are tied together. In text 41, Krishna was describing the quality of vyavasayatmaka buddhi, means the controlled mind, fixed mind, one-pointed, in Krishna consciousness, as opposed to bahushaka, means many-branched. People don't even realize that their mind is all over the place. They have nothing to contrast it with. But actually, the controlled mind, the focused mind, is how you really get things done. Isn't it? If you have to do anything, even if it's just fix a car or sweep a floor, if you're spacing out and your mind is all over the place, you can't do it properly, certainly. So fixing the mind is important for any kind of work that we want to do, and especially for advancement in devotional life. Because again and again, Krishna reminds us in this Bhagavad Gita that this is a yoga process. And yoga means control of the senses, control of the mind, and one-pointed attention. And the ultimate one-pointed control and focus is called samadhi. It means you're thinking of this one thing and nothing else. There's no. It's like a flow of oil poured out of a jar. You know, there's no breaks in it like that. Whereas Krishna says in the sixth chapter, like the burning of a lamp in a windless place. That's the way your consciousness is meant to be, without any flickering or anything like that. So that is called fixed mind and fixed intelligence, and that will be explained further in this chapter later on in subsequent verses. So speaking in the context of the Vedic culture, the time he's speaking, Krishna gives the examples of ideas and words and attractions that distract from this one-pointed mind. And in this culture, it's the promises of the Vedas for going to heaven. You know, the gardens of Nandakanana, where Indra and the nymphs and the apsaras cavort there, you know, enormous wealth, very strong body, good senses, beauty, longevity, you know. All of this is promised in the heavenly planets. Krishna says, pushpitam vacham, very flowery words. And those who are supposed knowers of the Vedas, called the Veda, Vada, Rata, they say that this is the whole thing what the Vedas is. This is what the meaning of this. Nanyarastitivarana. They say there's nothing else. And therefore, they engage in and get others to engage in very kriya vishesha bahalam, very elaborate sacrifices involving great expense, paying so many to chant mantras, to go to heavenly planets and good birth, good karma, and all of these different things. This is the pala. This is the fruit that they're looking for. And the word, which is the beginning of Bhogaishraya Katim Prati. They're focused on these two categories of things. Aishwarya and boga means wealth and the enjoyment that it buys. Now, doesn't that sound familiar? That's what's going on in this so-called culture. Try to get some wealth so you could enjoy. Or try to get some wealth so you can at least live, so that then you can have a little bit of enjoyment, you know? But these two things, bhoga and aishwarya, and generally, they bewilder the mind of everybody. This is called the mode of passion. When you're so much after increasing your wealth so that you can enjoy. This is the perfect definition of the mode of passion. That's what the mode of passion is. And it leads to misery. It creates greed, Krishna describes in the 14th chapter, because it's never enough, you know. Material enjoyment is by its nature frustrating because it's very temporary. It's flickering. But the desire of the soul is for unlimited happiness, steady, unending, ananta. So there's a contrast there. We bewildered, we have no idea of this other field of enjoyment in the spiritual world, serving Krishna. And so we try to enjoy through this limited body and limited senses and limited mind. That's called bhoga. Or as Krishna says, yehi sangsparjaja bhoga. In the fifth chapter, he will say. Sangsparjaja bhoga means that enjoyment that comes from the senses contacting their sense objects. And that includes the mind. So he says, prasaktana, those who are too attached. Look for this prefix as you read these verses of pra. Pra is always an intensifier. Prabhupada even, you'll hear it in his lectures, prakrishta rupena. Prakrishta rupena. It means that this pra is intensifying. So, asakta, to be attached is one thing, but prasaktana means very attached. To bhoga ishwarya, and therefore whose minds are bewildered. Taya apudita chetasam means the mind is stolen away. This word ruta is related to the word hari. You know, hari is Krishna. And we want him to take our mind away. We want him to take our material attachments away. We want him to enchant us completely so that we'll completely fall in love with him and simply serve him. That's hari, you know. But here, this word harita means literally the mind is enchanted or captivated or stolen away by bhoga and aishwarya. Just look around you. And there, in such a mind, vyavasayatmagad buddhi, that steady determination, that fixed mind to serve Krishna, doesn't happen. Samadha navadhiyate, you see. So this is a very good verse for us because when our mind wanders, when we find this distraction, it's always this bhoga and aishwarya, either memories of it or ideas of future things, or maybe it's happening around us. You know, this is what's distracting us, the desire for bhoga. We know the first thing you learn in the Hare Krishna is you can't just go into the walk-in and start eating. You know, it's got to be offered. It's called bhoga. Right? Bhoga means that which Krishna is meant to enjoy. Then we take prasadam, we take the avashishya, the remnants. Then it becomes a spiritual activity. But just to go and eat, even if it's vegetarian, it's still sin. He describes, yagi shishtasya naksanto, muchinte sabakilj, bundite te dvagambapa ye pachant atmakaranat. If you simply cook so you'll eat, then it's sinful. You know, but the santas, the devotees, they only eat what is first offered for sacrifice. It's kind of a sacrifice when you make the offering to Krishna. And it's shishta, means it's remnants. Then that's not considered bhoga, it's considered prasadam. Right? It's considered Krishna's grace. So therefore, it's connected to Krishna and he blesses it and is purifying. And especially if you take it in the proper mentality. So, if we want to attain samadhi, now samadhi has different meanings. Of course, it's a very exalted state of absorption, and that's what we should aim for. But here, the generic idea is this focus, where we can really focus our mind on Krishna. We have to become detached from bhoga and aishwarya. And that's why there's so many rules and regulations. You know, Krishna consciousness is just 180 degrees different. The greatest advanced souls are those who have zero bhoga and aishwarya. Who do we exalt? You know, six Goswamis. You know, what does it say? Tyakva tuna mashesha mandata pati shading sada tuchavat. They can, Balaram, try to see if we can encourage them to. So, you know, what do they have? Ashesha mandala pati shading means endless opportunities for enjoyment, especially Sanatan and Rupa and Raghunath. They were, Raghunath was an extremely wealthy family. He could have had the highest enjoyment any Bhogan Aishwarya he wanted. And Rup and Sanatan were ministers of the king, Nawab Hussein Shah. They were surrounded by aristocracy and you know, whatever they wanted. Of course, they didn't indulge in it, but they had the opportunity. And as soon as they met Lord Chaitanya, you know, they made plans for giving it up. Rupa Goswami, you know, loaded all of his money, accumulated gold in a huge boat. Imagine a huge boat, you know, a 30-foot, 40-foot yacht piled high with gold. Imagine how much that would be worth today. Billions. Billions of dollars. Or hundreds of millions. He was giving it up. You know, he gave half to his family, otherwise they'll freak out. Okay, you take it, you know. Take half. He kept half, a quarter for emergencies, gave a quarter, which is still millions of dollars, to the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. And that the rest that he kept for emergency was used to bribe his brother out of, for his brother to bribe his way out of jail. What is it?
Did he get half from his family or a quarter?
Half, if I recall, yeah. Anyway, so what did he have left for himself? Nothing. A little copan, you know. And they would end up, they would walk around Vrindavan. They didn't even have a home, you know, under each little tree, you know, each different tree. Hardly sleeping or eating. I mean, that's like as bare bones as you get. Not even sleeping or eating. And, you know, no question of houses and nothing. But they were the wealthiest, you know, the verse. They gave it up. Bhutva dina ganeshako kadunaya. Out of their mercy, they became the protectors of all of the dina, the wretched souls, namely ourselves and anyone else who doesn't know about Krishna. And they took kopi in the kantashita. They simply got the rejected clothes, you know, that were worn out. They even put that, get something, you know. But were they suffering? No. Gopi mbhavara samatabda lahari kalola magnomaho. Again and again, they were diving and surfing and surfacing and drinking in the ocean of nectar of the gopi's love for Krishna, which is the highest pleasure there can possibly be. So they were the wealthiest. But no bhoga, no aishwarya, you see. No material enjoyment. So that's the ideal. And absorption, 100% absorption. Their minds were completely absorbed. So those are the most exalted. Now, who's honored in today's world? You know, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, you know, somehow make billions of dollars. You know, Bill Gates, it's due to his wife. She's a little pious. She got him to give billions of dollars for charity. So maybe he'll be a human being in his next life, you know. But to make that much money, you know, you've got to be, it's a sin. I mean, all that money wasted without service to Krishna. But anyway, you know, those are the people whose names everybody in the world knows, you know. Now, they're getting to know Prabhupada's name, but, you know, he's not as well known. It's our job to propagate. But the real great souls are practically anonymous in this world because it's Kali Yuga, you know. So let's not let our minds get too attracted for Bhoga and Aishwarya and be bewildered, and then we won't be able to concentrate on Krishna consciousness. That's the message of this verse. Any discussion on this one? Okay, let's go to the next one, because they're all tied together. He's basically weaning Arjuna away from his absorption in the flowery words of the Vedas, which he used in chapter 1 to argue for not fighting the war. Trigunyavishayaveda Nistrigunyombhavarjuna Nirdvandho Nitya Satvasto Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. O Arjuna, become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety. Excuse me. And be established in the self. Purport. All material activities involve actions and reactions in the three modes of material nature. They are meant for fruitive results which cause bondage in the material world. The Vedas deal mostly with fruitive activities to gradually elevate the general public from the field of sense gratification to a position on the transcendental plane. Arjuna, as a student and friend of Lord Krishna, is advised to raise himself to the transcendental position of Vedanta philosophy, where, in the beginning, there is Brahma Jigyasa, or questions on the supreme transcendence. All the living entities who are in the material world are struggling very hard for existence. For them, the Lord, after creation of the material world, gave the Vedic wisdom advising how to live and get rid of the material entanglement. When the activities for sense gratification, namely the Karmakanda chapter, are finished, then the chance for spiritual realization is offered in the form of the Upanishads, which are part of a different Vedas, as the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the fifth Veda, namely the Mahabharata. The Upanishads mark the beginning of transcendental life. As long as the material body exists, there are actions and reactions in the material modes. One has to learn tolerance in the face of dualities, such as happiness and distress, or cold and warmth, and by tolerating such dualities become free from anxieties regarding gain and loss. This transcendental position is achieved in full Krishna consciousness when one is fully dependent on the goodwill of Krishna. So, here the word vishaya means subject matter. It means different things on the subject matter. So, trigunya means the three modes. So, this is an interesting idea that the Vedas, you know, because we're trying to follow the Vedic culture, right, in Krishna consciousness, are mainly dealing with the three modes of nature. Well, what is that all about? I thought that it, you know, it's going to lead us to transcendence. But the idea is, and this ties in with how the Srimad Bhagavatam was written, is that Vyasadeva, you know, their mission of Vyasadeva and all these other sages who gathered in Naimisharanya, you know, is to somehow do something for these benighted Kali Yugites. When the Kali Yuga was beginning, they could see by their mystic vision that everything's going to become very degraded. And the human beings, they're going to be misguided. Even if they want some spiritual life, they'll go to some bogus yogis and, you know, misguiders. And that's, we see that all around us. So how will they be able to be advanced? What will happen? Because Vyasadeva had already written all these other Vedas. And his idea was, well, you know, people can't take to the pure thing right away. It's too radical. It's like, you know, I always like to use the analogy of the drug addict, because it's like that. We're all addicted to the things of this world. So, you know, if you go cold turkey, then it's very painful. So you go to rehab, you know, where you have association, and, you know, maybe, I don't know if they ever do, but this was what I was saying. When I was very young, in the 60s, they came up with this thing which was a substitute for heroin. Because living in New York area, which is the capital of heroin addiction in America, it was in the news all the time. So I was aware of it. I was never involved in it, believe me. But I knew about it. I lived 20 miles from New York City, you know, and there's hundreds of thousands of addicts there. So this was a big revolution because, you know, heroin addiction is such a heavy thing. Well, now you can get this methadone. It's legal. You don't have to worry about it. You just line up, you get your methadone, and it cuts off your addiction to heroin. But you kind of get an addiction to methadone. But that's okay, because it's legal. You can come and get it, you know. So in this way, you know, people would line up. These addicts would line up. So they know that if they just round them up and put them in jail, that they'll go through this horrible withdrawal agony, and it's not going to be any good, you know. So better to wean them off, and maybe eventually they get free from the methadone also. I guess that was the idea. So this was somewhat, you know, it's a perverted reflection, but that's the idea. People are so attached that you can't just have them immediately go into transcendence and give and follow the four regular principles and join the Hare Krishnas. It's not going to work. So we'll have them stay within the Veda culture. You follow all these rules and regulations. You worship Indra, you worship Chandra, you say these mantras, and you go to the heavenly planets. And within all of these mantras and these sacrifices, there's something about Vishnu all the time. So they're getting some benefit. Om is there throughout. There's all these Oms, you know. So in this way, the people will gradually be elevated. So, but what happened was that, you know, as the Kali Yuga progressed, that people, even if they're following the Vedic culture, they stopped caring about the restrictions. They started using the Vedas as an excuse for even cow slaughter, because there's some places in the Vedas where an elderly cow is, you know what I mean? So Narada chastised his disciple, Vyasadeva. He says, they won't care for the restrictions, they'll just go for the sense gratification part. And eventually the whole thing will become corrupted. And Vyasadeva was, therefore, that's why he was dissatisfied. And so that's why Narada told him, then now you just write something totally straight preaching, you know, on just Krishna, his incarnations, his devotees, his devotion practices, nothing else. No little scope for sense gratification. Because it's poison. Why give them a little poison? So that's how the Bhagavatam came to be written. And Krishna is saying the same thing here. He's saying that don't be enamored of the Vedic culture as a whole and get into these flowery words. Just you be nistraigunyo. You be transcendental to the modes, you see, and be beyond the dualities of heat and cold, pleasure and pain. This is the purpose. Krishna doesn't have much time. The battle is about to begin. He has to be very concise and bring Arjun completely to the point of full surrender in the few minutes that he has to speak. Be always fixed in goodness, which is, and ultimately pure goodness. Nir yoga kshema atmavan. Now, nir yoga kshema, this phrase comes up again in the 9th chapter, where Krishna, the same context, kind of. He says, you don't have to worship the demigods. If you worship the demigods, or worship me by worshiping the demigods, he says, actually, then even if you go there and you can drink the soma rasa and enjoy godly delights, eventually you'll come back down here. You're not going to make any progress on your life's mission to get liberation and go back to Godhead. You'll be enamored by all those enjoyments, and you'll forget about devotion, maybe just on the side, just like these demigods. They're devotees, but it's sakama devotion. It's devotion with conditions. They want to be leaders. They want to be controllers. Okay, so you'll be Indra. We need somebody to manage the universe, and you'll get your perks. You'll be able to play in Nandakanana, and you'll have the apsaras dancing and all this business. But you'll have a responsible position in devotional service. Well, that's not what this movement is about. That doesn't take you back to Godhead. And Indra's constantly getting into trouble because he's Indra. He's letting the Indriyas control him. It's not an accident that his name is Indra, and the Indriyas are the senses. So that's not good enough, So Krishna says, don't be near yoga kshema. So after that verse, he says, Ananyas chintayanto mam, yejana payupasate, tesham nityavyuktanam, yoga kshema vahamyam. It's the very same words, you see. So this yoga and kshema are gain and protection. The kshema is like welfare, what we need, protection. Yoga are the things you need to live. Don't worry about them. Don't be so absorbed in increasing your wealth, increasing your. We will have what you need. You transcend the modes of nature, and this is what he's encouraging Arjun to do. So let's see. So the idea is, advise Arjun to come out of the karma kanda. The karma kanda. Kanda is canto. Okay, when we get the 10th canto, 5th canto, that comes from the word kanda. In Sanskrit, it's a rough equivalency. It means a big chapter or a section of a work. And so there's a whole section of the Vedas that deal with karma. Good karma. How you can get good karma and get bad, not bad karma. But that we don't need that. We don't want any karma. If you have any kind of karma, even so-called good, it'll bring you back to this world. You have to receive the results of your good karma, of your. And where are you going to receive it? In this material world. So it keeps you bound up, by birth and death. So we are looking for naishkarmya, the state of working that doesn't incur any karma, good or bad. That's the ideal that we want. And we want our karma, good or bad, to be gradually eradicated and negated, and not incur any more karma. That's Krishna consciousness. It's called naishkarmya. That will be explained in later chapters. So he's encouraging Arjun to do that. Arjun was not fighting, wanted not to fight for his own interest. He wanted to see his relatives alive. That was his own motive. But Krishna is saying, no, that's a personal motive, even though you're trying to justify it by the flowery words of the Vedas. He was saying, I've read in the Vedas that if you kill the men, the women become unprotected, and the families are destroyed. And I have heard in the Vedas that such people who do that go to hell, and those whose traditions are destroyed. You see? He's trying to bring in the Vedas to justify his activity that he wants to do. But that's precisely what Krishna says not to do here. He says, you want bhoga and aishwarya, and therefore you're practicing karma kanda? That's, your mind is, you'll never come to samadhi that way. You'll never advance. So right away, chapter 2 here, Krishna is rejecting all this, and he's taking us to a different level. He's taking us to Vedanta. to inquire into the absolute truth, the absolute good, and the absolute platform of enjoyment, ultimately. Don't ever forget that. That real enjoyment is endless. It has to be endless. It can't be flickering like sense gratification. And this will come up in chapter 5, because he's talking about bhoga. So one of my favorite verses, and Bhaktivikasa Swami also says he uses it all the time too. This, yehi sang sparjaja, bhoga, duka yonaye vite, adyanta banta kontaya neteshu ramate buddha. The intelligent, the buddha, do not engage in this sang sparjaja bhoga, which means enjoyment that is born out of the touching of the senses to the sense objects. It's such a revolutionary concept. Think about that. Now, why don't they take part in it? Because it's dukkha yoni. It's the source of your misery. You know, that really places a puzzle. Okay, enjoyment is that enjoyment which causes misery, then you're stuck, right? So he says the wise don't take pleasure in it because it has a beginning and an end. And in the previous verse, he says, well, where do the wise souls take their pleasure? Bhayasparshesu asaktatma. He says, they're not attached to this bhayasparshesu, you know. Avindadyatmana yatsukam. They're enjoying the pleasure within. Krishna was within every one of our hearts. We're carrying the reservoir of pleasure within us, and we're looking outside, just like the desert, the famous, you know, animal that's running out to the desert. Instead of drinking at the pool next to his feet, he's running out to the oasis, the mirage in the desert, and dying. That's right inside our heart, we have Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure. So, bhayasparshesu asaktatma, vindadyatmana yatsukam, he enjoys the sukha from within. Atmana yatsukam, sab brahma yoga yuktatma, sukhamakshaya mushnate. So Brahma Yoga Yuktatma means the soul is linked up to Brahman, the Supreme Brahman, is Krishna, through yoga, thinking, serving, doing all the things we do. And therefore, Sukham Akshayam Ashnate. He enjoys unbreakable happiness. That's the alternative. But we need to be weaned away. We need rehab, because we're so addicted to these external enjoyments. That's the process of bhakti. To train the senses. Bhakti yoga, the Vaidhi bhakti, the under regulation, means everything. All the senses, the mind, the intelligence, the voice, everything you have, your money, everything is meant to be engaged in Krishna's service and purified. And suddenly you find yourself happy, right? And you find, you know, this is really the platform of happiness. And it doesn't depend on the physical body, because there's a spiritual body in there that's developing. This is truly the happiness that can continue beyond death. You know, beyond, there's no limit to it. So he's bringing us to that point. Okay, going on. Unless there's some discussion. Yes, Prabhu.
One realization I had about the Vedas, the whole system of reward and punishment. It's like how sometimes parents, you know, they want their child to go to the school, but it's very difficult to explain to him, like, because child doesn't have that much intelligence, why really ultimately in the long run it's good for him. So they just say, okay, I'll give you this little ice cream. If you go to school, you get the ice cream.
Exactly.
So say all these promises of heaven are just like ice cream, but the point is pushing them up to more of goodness.
Yeah, it's supposed
and
to work like
goodness,
that.
There's a chance they will come in touch with it, appreciate something related to a devotee.
The problem is that the kids get attached to the ice cream, and they forget.
Yeah.
That exactly that point is made by Krishna in the 11th canto that we're just reading. We're just reading in the morning, the 11th canto. And Krishna says, the promises of heavenly enjoyment and everything are just like candy you give to a child that takes a medicine.
Yeah,
you know, but if you forget about the medicine part, you know, you get attached to the candy. So sometimes, you know, the bitter medicine has to be there, or you have to enlighten. All right, let's go on. This is an important verse.
Bhishma.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bhishma.
I was curious. There's another text, and I forget how it starts, but I remember how it ends with the "We'll save you from the most dangerous fear."
Yes, that we just read it. Neha Bhikkhumanasho
Sti,
text 40.
Text 40.
In this chapter.
Yeah. Because it's saying here in this text, be free from all dualities and free from all anxieties for gain and safety.
Yeah.
It seems like this, would the safety connect with that, with the, like you're safe from the greatest fear of
Well, there's plenty of things to be afraid of, you know, besides just, you know, falling to the lower species. I mean, that's certainly something. No, the idea is that even a little advancement in devotional service will protect you from falling into the lower species. But still, we shouldn't want to take birth, you know. Isn't it enough to have to spend like 9 months, you know, and cramped up and then go through disease, old age? And that's not good, even if you're a human being, you know. But at least if you're a human being, you have a chance to continue devotional service. That's the whole idea. A little bit, you know, will protect you. But I'm not sure exactly.
Well, I'm just trying to understand that point, I guess, like to be fruitful.
Well, he's encouraging Arjun. No, the thing is, he's encouraging Arjun to go beyond just a little advancement. He wants him to become fully fixed in samadhi here.
Gain and safety is the anxiety that comes part of a struggle for existence. That, oh, I'm the doer, I need to make sure to add more, and otherwise...
Yeah, you know, everybody's in anxiety about yoga and shema.
Yeah,
that's only if you're truly transcendental and you're relying on Krishna and you're satisfied with whatever comes easily of its own accord, which is another aspect of knowledge, can you be free of that? You know, that's why living simply is such a wealth, you know. I mean, look at all the anxiety, you know, going on in this world. You guys don't even know. You know, people, they've invested their life in their house, you know. And you have all these dreams. Oh, yes, this house will be, you know, my wealth when I get old. And yeah, we're retirement, we got it all planned out. And then the roof falls in, almost literally. And you don't have that. Then what? You know, that which you put your faith in and your hopes in has betrayed you. But you know, when you're close to the ground, so to speak, you know, all you got is three dhotis and two kirtas and a tube of toothpaste. Then where you have to worry? You're not in debt. Like I was saying, when this whole thing, you know, happened, it's a good career move to join the Hare Krishnas, because otherwise you'll end up, you know, $50,000, $100,000 in debt. Below water, you're not in debt. You're richer than anyone who owes $100,000. Think of it that way. They're below water. They're below zero. And you're happily chanting Hare Krishna.
That's all the spiritual
account. Yes, and you're very wealthy. It's the wealth. You know, prema dana, it's called.
Mark, you know? Another says that you have no bhaya. There is no...
The bhaya, the fear, that's fear. No, he's talking about fear. Yeah.
So taking Krishna consciousness, another means also that either materially you have no bhaya, and even spiritually also you have no bhaya, because even though say somehow or other you could not make it, still there is no loss.
There's no loss or diminution. Yeah, so you pick it up, and you know when you see in perspective, you have to broad-minded, be mahatma for just a minute. So many millions of births we've had. Millions of lives of Brahma. Who knows how long we've come to this point. So, okay, let's be honest. Maybe all of us won't make it back to God in this lifetime. So, two or three lifetimes, you know, compared to all of that, practically we're at the finish line. We can almost put our nose across it already. You know what I mean? So, I mean, you can look at it that way. It's all auspicious. Not to slack off. We should try to go back to God in this lifetime. But even if you don't, it's all positive. It's win-win. Win-win, you know.
I remember in India, in '70s, they had so much problem, 65, 70, and lots of problem in India. So they used to have ration.
Mm.
Government used to give ration for
rations,
rice,
or
for all kind of stuff.
Cooking oil.
So they used to have a big line, you know,
ration.
Huge line. So you know in the population of India how it is.
Yeah.
So you stay for all day. And you just going to be at the door and door closed.
Oh my God. Anxiety.
Kind of anxiety. But at least you are at the door now. Next day you
start. Oh, so you get your place.
So you consider like that. The big line, we pass through 8.4 million pieces of life.
Yeah, yeah.
At least we are at the door.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a hope to get the rest of the
door. Exactly. So we just have to stay on the path. At least we're heading in the right direction. All right, let's read another one. It's about 8 o'clock now. Yavanata
Udapani.
Sarvatak Samplutodake.
Sarvatak Samplutodake.
Taban Sarveshu Vedeshu.
Taban Sarveshu Vedeshu.
Brahmanasya vijanataha. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Purport. The rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the Karmakanda division of the Vedic literature are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 15:15. The purpose of studying the Vedas is to know Lord Krishna, the primeval cause of everything. So self-realization means understanding Krishna and one's eternal relationship with him. The relationship of the living entities with Krishna is also mentioned in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 15:7. The living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. Therefore, revival of Krishna consciousness by the individual living entity is the highest perfectional stage of Vedic knowledge. This is confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:33:7 as follows. Aho bata shapachoto gariyan yad jighagre vartate namatubhyam te pustapaste juhuvu sasnaraya brahmanuchu namagunantiyete. Another verse to memorize. Oh, verse Wallace. Oh, my Lord, a person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like that of a chandala, or dog eater, is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Such a person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to Vedic rituals and studied the Vedic literatures many, many times after taking his bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage. Such a person is considered to be the best of the Aryan family. I will discuss this in a minute. So one must be intelligent enough to understand the purpose of the Vedas without being attached to the rituals only, and must not desire to be elevated to the heavenly kingdoms for a better quality of sense gratification. It is not possible for the common man in this age to follow all the rules and regulations of the Vedic rituals, nor is it possible to study all of the Vedanta and the Upanishads thoroughly. It requires much time and energy, knowledge and resources to execute the purposes of the Vedas. This is hardly possible in this age. The best purpose of Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. When Lord Chaitanya was asked by a great Vedic scholar, Prakash Ananda Saraswati, why he, the Lord, was chanting the holy name of the Lord like a sentimentalist instead of studying Vedanta philosophy, the Lord replied that his spiritual master had found him to be a great fool and thus asked him to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. He did so and became ecstatic like a madman. In this age of Kali, most of the population is foolish and not adequately educated to understand Vedanta philosophy. The best purpose of Vedanta philosophy is served by inoffensively chanting the holy name of the Lord. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. Are you here standing on end yet? This is such an encouraging purport. First of all, this Aho Bhatashra Pachodagurin. This is Devahuti speaking to Kapila Dev. She's getting her instruction from her exalted son, and she's saying how wonderful you are. You know, what to speak of seeing you. Even if someone just chants your holy name, they become qualified to perform all the Vedic sacrifices. And this is a companion verse for the other one. So, now, Shvapacha, this is like, a symbol of the low-class person, the dog eater. But, you know, they never say cow eater. I always think that, you know, those of us who just grew up in this so-called culture eating cow meat, are much lower than the dog eaters. You know, I mean, just logically speaking. So, but he says, how great are they, even if they're born as dog eaters, who on the tip of whose tongue your name is vibrating. Is she speaking to Kapila Dev, Krishna? They must have undergone all these sacrifices, austerities in previous life, studied the Vedas, if they're chanting your holy name. Now, here we are chanting the holy name. Somehow or other, we may not be chanting offensively, but on the tip of the tongue, the name is vibrating. So, did we perform all these? Well, maybe. You know, it says right here, or you could say Prabhupada made our good fortune, right, and we're chanting. But whether we did all this in a previous life or not, we're at the point of chanting the holy name. And if we just perfect that, then that will be the perfection of our life. As Prabhupada says, the greatest Vedantist is one who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name. So we've experienced a little pleasure, so let's go with that. Increase it more and more until that's the only pleasure you get. with Adamya, when you hear him chant, you'll see he's a great kirtaniya. 4-hour kirtan I had in L.A. the other day, right? And everybody got completely ecstatic. It was like the old days. This movement was built on long kirtans out on the street, but they still were happening. And that's why you see those old DVDs and everybody's ecstatic with bliss. And other people wanted to get that. That's how the movement grew. Anyway, so Yavanautapanare. So if you just become attached to chanting this holy name, and at the same time, as Maharaj was so nicely explaining, that you understand the philosophy behind it. Because you can also get sentimentally attached and go from chanting to enjoying, you know. The very chanting that you're doing, and this is a direct experience in my own experience, that it increases your enjoyment potency. It's a Ladini Shakti that you're feeling. Ladini Shakti is Krishna's pleasure potency. Radharani, personified. Srimati Radharani is love of God personified, prema personified. Radha, Krishna, Praniya Vikriti, Ladini Shakti. Praniya Vikriti means the transformation of that. So that's the spiritual pleasure potency. Whenever we're feeling any kind of pleasure in Krishna consciousness, it's a little drop of that Ladini Shakti that we're experiencing. And we're meant to really experience it at every moment. But that only happens when we're serving Krishna at every moment, and, you know, favorably. So that very Ladini Shakti, when expressed through the material modes of nature, you know, when we become bewildered by the material energy and we're in Maya, then that same Ladini Shakti gets expressed through the material energy as sense gratification, and it causes misery. So now, here's what happens, is that big kirtan, you know, devotees get, they awaken this Ladini Shakti. You can go on, you can become ecstatic, you can be crying, you know. But if you're not careful, when the kirtan ends, you know, that your enjoyment mood doesn't be diverted into matter, then you can get into that habit of, you know, and that's called sahajiya. That, you know, there's whole sampradayas in India, the bowels, you know. They don't study anything. We don't need no books. We're already chanting the holy name. But if they, without the philosophy to strengthen the mind and the intelligence to direct that shakti, you know, and constantly in service, then you can come, then it, that very kirtan, that very, can feed your obsession for anything in the material world. You know, that's a fact. That's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, therefore we need both things. We need to develop a taste of chanting. That's prominent. And both have to be there. Not just kirtan, but also japa. See, he has a japa bag around, isn't he? He's a kirtan man, but he has a japa. Both have, because that japa is where you develop the ability to remember Krishna constantly. You know, it's very important. They both feed each other. Lord Chaitanya also chanted japa. It's recorded by his contemporaries. So he recommended both and showed both. So here's this and this verse that they must have performed all these rituals. And then, you know, the purpose of the Vedas. Now, this is such a wonderful thing. You know, I always think of this phrase from the Bible, you know, where it says, the last shall be first and the first shall be last. You know, Jesus was always preaching like, well, how do we apply that to modern day? Well, you know, here we are, the last. We're the last. You know, we're out of the Vedic culture. We're far away from India. You know, before Prabhupada came, before there was anything, they're just wallowing in sin, all kinds of things, and going toward a very degraded lifetime, like a future. So we didn't know anything about anything. And so, but that was an advantage in one sense. Why did Prabhupada's movement take off when he came to America? It didn't take off in India. Because they know the Vedas, the flowery words of the Vedas. They knew, I know Krishna, you know. So that, all of this business, you know, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, da 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 da, Upanishads, you know. So, but the fruit, the end of the whole thing, you know, is the attraction to chant Hare Krishna. It's Krishna. Vedaischa sarva ahameva vedyaha. Prabhupada is quoting 15 here, right? All the Vedas, I am to be known. The whole thing ends in me. Personality of Krishna. Not some impersonal something. Not vague, you know. Very, very detailed. Vishesh. We sing every day. We take 10 times, you know. Nirvishesha shunyabadi pashtada desha tarine. Prabhupada delivered us from the nirvishesh conception of the Supreme. No details. No variety. Just one smooth, homogeneous light. You know, this is the impersonalist view. What's the attraction? Ah, freedom from birth and death. No more pain. I am that I am. I exist eternally. How wonderful, you see? No interrelationship, no love, no nothing, you see? That doesn't work. You have to turn it off. Hare Krishna. So, he delivered us from that. What to speak of shunyavad, that the ultimate thing, we don't exist. Do you want to think that you don't exist? That everything is nothing? You know? What kind of, you know, that's horrible to think like that. But that's the way so many people think, out of fear, out of disgust with this world. The motive is not love. The motive is fear. The motive is horror. That's the motive of the Buddhists and the impersonalists. So, he saved us from that and gave us Krishna. So many vishesh, you know? This is a verse from Padyavali describing meditating on Krishna. Oh, beautiful complexion, just like the Indivara lotus flower, just like, you know, the rain cloud in the sky. Wearing this peacock plume, what does it look like? With different multicolors, you know, very nice, you know. Shri Vatsanka, he's got this detail on his chest, you know, we learn about that. And, you know, all these different things, you know, Kaustubha gem. Oh, where does a Kaustubha gem come from? What is that, you know? And he's standing in a specific form, threefold bending form, playing the flute. What kind of flute does he play? Oh, he has the Vamshi, he has the Venu, has the different kinds of flutes, different kinds of raga. It's endless. You know, and that's just, you know, setting it up. Then there's the Leela, then there's all of his relationships, and then what are they like? Who is Lalita? Who is Vishaka? Who is Bhadrasen? Who is Sudama? What do they do? There's no limit to it. It's a world of vishesh, of details. God is in the details. That's our home, you know, and it's all, you know, based on this absolute truth. It's the absolute truth. The absolute truth is not just a force, not just a light, not just some idea, person. And person means everything, a world, a relationship, family, everything we do. You know. So that's what Prabhupada gave us. And because we didn't know anything else about the Vedas, and we had faith in Prabhupada, boom. You know, the movement took off. Yes, chant Hare Krishna? Why not? I'll chant Hare Krishna. You know, that's the blessing. Oh, why should I chant Hare Krishna? Why shouldn't I chant Indra? The Surya. My grandmother taught me this. There's this God from this village. You know, So India's come around now. And India is much bigger than any other place now. Because, it, you know, the white elephants came over. And, you know, Prabhupada's strategy. But the last shall be first. So kick out everything else. You've reached the end. Now just cultivate your Krishna consciousness and be successful in your life. You won the lottery. You know, we were much greater than a multi-million-dollar lottery. This is it. It's right here. We don't have any more time. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Adi, adi, adi.